Love Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I'm just a man, when you are by my side, with the house of God, I know I can be strong.
Good evening. Happy Shabbat to one and all. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio and our Torah program this evening. We have Kirk with us as well as JB. How are you, fellas?
Good, thank you.
Doing good?
Great. I was just told in the chat room that there was an old radio show on where I did an interview long before I had come to realize that Paul, the author of half the Christian New Testament, was a scallywag and scumbag. And he said, you know, I can post it, but, you know, you may not want that. And I said, yeah, I've made my share of mistakes. You know, you live and learn. We don't have all the answers when we begin this journey.
All the answers are at the beginning. Where's the fun in the journey at that point?
That's true. And where is the humility and joy learning something new? I mean, it's, you know, making a mistake is a humbling experience that really sets our perspective correctly. And there's great joy in replacing the deception with what's true. So, in all honesty, not wholly embarrassed nor regretful of the mistakes. I'm just delighted with the opportunity to learn. Kirk, you asked me a question in today's observations program. We were reading a really straightforward passage. I'm going to read the passage again, and I want you to rephrase your question, because I think the discussion that we had following your question was extremely important. In fact, I think it drives right to the heart of what we're doing here. I read the following. Choose of your own free will to actually stand up. Elect to rise up on your feet and take a stand. Electing to walk independently and of your own initiative, through and within the land, approaching her length, which is from Oric, to prolong life in the proper way, in addition to her breadth, which is from Rokab, to be without limitations. Because, for you to approach, I am genuinely giving her to you forever. And Kirk, we came to the realization that this has nothing to do with a piece of dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Yisrael represents Yahweh's yard. His home is in Jerusalem on Mount Moriah. And Yisrael is simply the yard for the children to play. He's not speaking of a piece of dirt here when he speaks of the land. He's speaking of his home for his children. And he is not speaking of its length or its breadth. He is speaking of the means to prolong life and to enable us to be limitless in every way. That is his gift, and all that he is asking of us is of our own volition to stand up and of our own accord, independently, to walk.
Mm-hmm.
If you just settle for a moment and think of the power of those words, you know, you're going to know who God is, what he's offering, and what he expects in return. All laid out there. And so what was the question you asked after we read that statement?
Well, I actually was asking, I was covering several things. One, it was, we talked about whether, well, I'm not sure how
to say it. Your question was, with this all so simple and so clear?
Oh, yeah, well, I did say that, you know, this seems so straightforward.
Why did so few people accept it?
Yes. And then we went through, then you went through quite a lot of material on covering different groups into the billions of people and what they had chosen to hear and what they chose not to look at. And it's, and I think I even flavored it a little bit with if we have an asama, we obviously we have the ability to think and don't. And it just is, it's not baffling to me anymore, but it was amazing that people choose to not study this at all. Now, I understand, if I can jump in just for a second before we discuss what we discussed, it was, I don't find it difficult anymore to, I find it difficult rather today when there's so much material and we have so much written that they could discover this thing if they wanted to. And we also, and they don't, and even though they claim to all the religions, at least Christianity does, they claim that they study God's Word all the time, and so does rabbinical Judaism and so forth. And Islam is a joke, but so forget that one. But
actually, Islam claims that the Torah is...
well, I know they claim it, but I mean, they don't look anything. I don't know what they're studying. They're studying Muhammad's, you know, nutcase, what he went after. So,
situational scriptures?
Yeah, situational scriptures gratify his own lust.
But he was, you know, the Talmud anyway. Whatever he did.
But he was bastardizing. What I did, for those who haven't had the opportunity to listen to it, and it's, I think it was just recently posted, is Kirk asked me, why is it that so few people capitalize on this offer from the Creator God of the universe when it is so sensationally generous, so incredibly beneficial, and so clearly presented? Why is it that so few people capitalize? And I went through the groups of people, and I want to repeat that here, because I really want this to sink in. As you asked me the question, these thoughts filled my mind, and they bear repeating. And I make no apology for repeating things. Yahweh uses that technique all the time. If it's good enough for him, it's sure as heck good enough for me. I said, well,
some of us are so thick-headed, the only way you're going to get to us is through repetition.
Well, you know, you certainly are not thick-headed. You're a very open-minded individual. That's why this appealed to you so early on. Religious people are thick-headed. They're not open-minded. Political people are biased and not open-minded. You've been open-minded from the start. What I began with, and I'm going to go in different order this time.
Okay.
First, Yahweh's people, Yisrael and Yehudim, known as Jews today. Why is it they can speak the language? They can read this in the original language. It's all there for them. There is no shortage of copies. This is the first book of the Torah. Bereshit, Genesis. This is the...
Many of them could probably cite it to you from memory.
Right. This is the third story. In the first book, you've got creation. You've got the story of, well, it's a little more if you break it down this way, but you've got the creation account. You've got the story of what occurred in Eden, both of which are unbelievably important to understanding who God is and what he's offering. And then you have the story of the flood, which is then, you know, is actually preceded by the story of Babel, which is plays an important role in all of this. The story of the flood. And how that serves as a preamble, a precursor, a dress rehearsal, if you will, for the covenant. And then we come to this discussion, chapter after chapter, word after word, about Yahweh reaching out to this man and to his wife, befriending him, introducing himself, and establishing a covenant relationship, laying out the conditions by which Abram, becoming Abraham, complied to receive its benefits. Five conditions, five benefits. And it is the single most important story ever shared with humankind. And here you are with 15 billion Jews today, maybe more, that don't bother to consider it. I don't even think they know it exists. Yes, they know that, you know, that all this began with Abraham. They do not know what God told Abraham, what Abraham responded, and how that represents terms and conditions of this covenant agreement. And what I shared with Kirk and our listeners this morning, the reason for that actually explains why God hates religion. Judaism has replaced this Torah account with their God-forsaken Talmud and rabbinical arguments and the Mishnah. And religious Jews not only prefer the Talmud and their oral law over Yahweh's Torah, they don't even bother with the Torah. Yahweh's teaching is irrelevant to them. They study the rabbis. So it doesn't matter how clear God was. Even to those that speak his language, they're so biased in favor of their Talmud, they don't even think about it. Never even dawns on them to look here for answers. And it's not going to be until someone who is not a Yehudim hits them between the eyes with it. And that's what Observations for Our Time is. That's why Yahweh was lifting it up. This is the way he's going to get their attention. Because there's no way to deny it. And they're going to need help. And when they solicit help, this is what they're going to find. The next group, of course, is Christians. Mm-hmm. 2.5 billion of them today. They've been hoodwinked by Paul to discount the Torah. They've been told by Paul and their religious leaders that the Torah can't save, that the God of the Old Testament is mean and wrathful, and that his laws no longer pertain, and it's all been replaced by the New Testament and the gospel of grace. And knowing him is no longer meaningful because all you have to do is believe them. Of course, it's a preposterous notion that the creator God of the universe created a plan that wouldn't work to engage in a relationship with his creation and got so frustrated that he turned to a pervert and failed rabbi named Paul to come up with an entirely different plan. I mean, what a stupid notion. But yet that is what they believe. And so they have been robbed of even focusing on this. You know, they'll occasionally look at a story from the Old Testament and include it as part of a sermon, but there is not one chance in a billion that any Christian is going to focus on the Torah as if their life depended on it. And as if this
even when they do, they're either citing a verse out of context or they're paraphrasing or summarizing a story. They usually won't even reference the actual text. They're just like, well, remember when this happened, and they paraphrase what their English Bible tells them it was. The only time they actually cite the text, it's out of context.
Correct. if there was ever a story that has to be understood in context, it's the discussion between Yahweh and Abraham.
Yeah.
And it doesn't just need to be understood in context. It needs to be appreciated as the very essence of life and death. There is no other way to life. None.
Yeah.
And they have been misled into discounting it, not even considering it. So there's 2.5 billion people on the planet that won't even consider this story. And the person to blame for that, that piece of crap known as Paul, who wrote half the Christian New Testament. And all the people that were willing to discount reason and believe the preposterous notion that the Creator God of the universe didn't get it right, and so he needed Paul to fix the problem.
So you can't blame it all on Paul. People are too stupid to see through Paul. That's their own fault, really.
You know, JB, I used to have empathy for Christians because I was once one. I used to feel sorry for them. I don't anymore.
Mm-hmm.
To be a Christian and to believe the lies of Christianity, you're just ignorant. You're stupid.
Yeah. Willfully.
It's so obvious that the religion
is day and age. The information is out there. So you are willfully ignorant.
Just think about it for a moment. How in the hell is it possible that God could have revealed his Torah through his prophets and then for all of that to be annulled and then replaced by the likes of Paul? Man replacing the words of God. Come on, folks. Think. How is it possible that your religion can be based upon God dying? If God died, he sure as hell can't save
He's
you.
He's not God.
Why is it that you worship on Sundays and celebrate Christmas and Easter when those are Babylonian holidays, purely pagan, as is your Trinity, as is your Mother of God and Queen of Heaven? All of it's pagan. It's pathetic. I mean, why can't you see that Paul and your Jesus are in irreconcilable conflict? It's your fault. You got no one to blame but yourself. I do not feel sorry for you. You've been misled, and you made it easy to be fooled. Now, of course, I have the same impression of Muslims, and there's 1.5 billion of them, and they have been told that Muhammad's Quran confirms the Torah and that he was the last of Allah's witnesses, so that's all they need to read. Figure out that the Quran was the worst book ever written. That it's a jumbled mess without context or chronology. That its God is actually Satan. And that Muhammad was a pervert, a pedophile, a rapist, a mass murderer, a terrorist. And that the entire Quran exists to satiate his perverted lifestyle. Then you're just too dumb to ever figure out who Yahweh is. You're way too stupid.
You're too stupid for God to want to spend eternity with.
Oh, I don't
mean to spend eternity with someone stupid enough to think God inspired the Quran.
Yes.
And I'm sure God does. He's a whole lot smarter than
you. You're that stupid. I don't want any part of you. Go away. It's your own damn fault. And then, of course, you have socialist secular humanists. And they have been trained to believe that the God of the Old Testament was created by a bunch of Bedouins out there. That he's no different than any of the other religions. And that he's arcane and mean-spirited. And there's nothing to learn from him. That he's just a myth like all other myths. And they're not even going to bother to read this story. Never. So what are you left with? You've got a billion or so socialist secular humanists, maybe a billion and a half, 2.5 billion Christians, 1.5 billion Muslims, and you can add to that 1 billion Hindus are lost in a pagan world that most people have long since realized was too stupid to believe. And so that's the reason. It isn't that it's hard to understand. It isn't that it's not clearly presented. It's not that it isn't available. The reason that the vast preponderance of people don't capitalize on Yahweh's offer is they don't even bother to consider it. They don't even know it's there.
Yep.
And that, my friends, is the entire purpose of this show and of this book, Observations for Our Time.
Let me throw a thought at you two guys for a minute. Because after we had our show today, we went out and got something to eat, and then I was taking some notes on what the question that was seemed to beg for an answer. These billions and billions of people, and I was thinking about it. It seems to be quite easy to seduce mankind with just a little bit of twisting of Yahweh's words. You know, like I wrote down, I think, something like this, a little Torah goes a long way. And Satan knows that, because think what little he said to Chawa, and that little bit of twisting did wonders. And look how Paul, right in the midst of Israel, could twist some things and just, even though most of his input was successful in Greek words.
Yeah, it's all about twisting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just such a tiny
What do you think Satan has presented as
right,
a snake?
Obviously. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
how does snakes, and he knows,
how does snakes
Satan
travel?
Knows, if anybody knows
body.
This, is Satan.
Right.
So, so there's two
is
ways
Satan
to control these creatures.
No! Right. It's just, it's a metaphor to explain that the essence of deception is twisting.
Right. So if you were trying to take over the world, as Satan covets, there's two probable approaches. One of them, of course, you can just beat the heck out of everybody and rule them. You know, be Lord, like the communists do or whatever. And even the caste system in India is the same principle.
Right.
And the other approach,
by the way, that's
the
purpose of religion. You know, it elevates.
Right. Well, I know,
over,
but they do it a little more sneaky. They will twist these words to have you, people will absolutely go off and kill for God and country. Just by twisting these words. Nobody coerced me and came to my house and beat me up to be a Christian. It was just twisting. I couldn't tell the difference, you know, enough. I didn't have enough ammunition. And that brought me to the second thought I had about it is how, because we often talk about how great this time is because we can look this up. I mean, there's no shortage of information and no place is easy for, I can sit on a computer with absolutely very limited skill and open up a whole world to studying the Torah. And that's what JB talked about so well last week on all the different things we have at our access to. And I thought to myself, you know, if Adam had a written language, if he had written the things down that Yahweh said, when Yahweh came into the garden, Satan came into the garden and talked to Yahweh and said, "Hey, didn't he say this?" They could have said, "Well, I don't, you know, I can't remember.
No.
Let's go take a look at it and we'll see." And we can. They couldn't do that because they didn't have anything written down. They just took whatever her memory was.
Correct.
So what is the best time in the world to live for us?
Right now. Right now. That was your program a week ago. Right now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think we've said this so many times that it's so important for people to process. You want to see God? Welcome. He presents himself visually and in every meaningful way in his Torah and prophets. He's right there. In fact, we're able to see him by analyzing his words vastly more clearly than those saw him who looked upon the burning peak of Mount Horeb.
Yeah.
Those who walked for 3 years beside Yahusha did not come to know or understand or see God nearly to the degree that we have.
Totally believe
it. You read their words, and it's obvious that we understand vastly more than Yahu Kanan or Shimon Kefesh or Jacob. Vastly more. And the reason why is that we have access to the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and access to science and to history. And and these marvelous tools that help us uncover every nuance of every word, such that we are given a profoundly superior advantage in coming to know who Yahweh is, what he's offering, and what he expects in return. There is no better time to live, no better time to know God than right now.
Totally agree.
Yeah, all you have to have is...
I think there are probably more people in Yahweh's covenant on earth right now than there have been probably for 2,000 years, even as small a number as we are, because more information is available for us now. You know, 20 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to find any of this.
No. And, you know, I want to be fair about this and say that there are not a lot of people out there who are not only retired, but are in a position to devote the time that I've devoted to this over the last 15 or 16 years.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of people out there that were blessed with kind of a unique aptitude to make connections. There's others, but, well, I didn't bring any skills to the table. I think Yahweh tapped me on the shoulder and said, I want you to do this. Because it, as voluminous as his message is, I process information quickly, form conclusions quickly, tend to be very rational, and love to make the connections that are necessary to understand who he is, what he's offering, and what he expects in return. And, you know, I'm retired.
And
I was at a point in life where I had the time and I had the want to. And so I understand that not everyone's going to be able to do what I've done. And Kirk and JB, you've been in a very material way. Jackie and her friends that edit these books are as well.
Yeah.
Have devoted so much time to this in hopes that others will come to embrace. Yeah, we'd like more really wonderful people to spend eternity with rather than fewer. But yes, we were given the opportunity because, you know, we're not working now. I don't have a young child at home that I have to look after. Yeah. And so we did have a benefit, but what we have done through these shows and through these books is give everyone the benefit of what we have done. And so they don't have to, you don't have to spend 15 years, 6 days a week, 10 hours a day. Well, that would be a great joy in your life if you did, but you don't have to do that.
It'd be great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you don't have to do that. Why? Because working with Yahweh, we've done it for you. Giving it to you on a silver platter.
I don't view our job at all as being to convert people or convince people or to win people over. Our job, as I see it, is basically to leave people with no excuse. To put the material out there and let them draw their own conclusions so that they have absolutely no excuse when the time comes. Yeah, my job isn't to convert anyone over and make them, you know, cram Yahweh down their throat.
No.
Right. I put the information out. If they want more, I'll give them as much as I can. But I'm not going to try and convince you that you're wrong.
It isn't hard to find this.
It's not what I'm good at.
It isn't hard to find us. It isn't hard at all to find us. If you want to know God, you're going to find us. You just are. And then once you found us, you can listen or you can read. It's all there.
Yeah, look up some. It's fun.
Yes. And then as you're listening and reading, then take a note here and there and go check it out for yourself. Do what both Kirk and James did. Say, wow, this is so different than everything I've ever been told or heard before. I need to verify what this guy is saying. And if you'll read, what you'll find is that it's all laid out there for you. Every word is presented so that you can look it up, every single one. You can Google the base form of every noun and verb throughout yada yada, an introduction to God, questioning Paul, or observations for our time, and you can just copy and paste it into your favorite search engine. I use Google. I don't like Yahoo because it's blasphemous. But I use Google. And if, for example, if I'm writing something and I just don't have all my tools open, I'll take the word and put it into Google, and it'll bring up 7 or 8 Hebrew-English dictionaries, and you can study it for yourself. It's not hard. It's really easy to verify it. It's really
fun.
And it's fun. And, you know, when you do it, you're afforded these great treasures. For example, if you just believe that Yahweh was speaking about walk through the length and breadth of the land, and you read that the word for length is orek, which means to prolong life in the proper way, to continuously grow in a manner that's fitting. And then you read that the word for breadth is rakav, which means to be without limitations, expansive and great, immense in spatial dimensions. And all of a sudden, you realize he's not talking about a piece of dirt. He's talking about, I'm giving this to you as a gift, the means to be eternal, to expand and grow and be empowered and be enriched beyond your imagination. That's what I'm offering you. And all you have to do is look. And I'm speaking particularly now to Jews who, you know, can read Hebrew. Look. Turn over these marvelous words. Examine them from every possible angle. Think about the implication. It is truly amazing. So, I want to continue with our presentation, but that's the reason that most people don't know this. It's all available. It's just that they don't even bother to think about it. And you've got to think about it. You know, a cursory reading of it is not going to get you there, is it?
No, the one you just mentioned, a rock. I mean, I didn't know. If you look it up, it talks about measuring length. But if you dig a little bit, the verb is almost always a measurement of time. Well, he's talking about land, and this is almost always about time. So if you put on your little thinking cap a little bit, he's talking about eternity. I mean, what else could it be? Or some kind of time, and also a wreck is a length of time and forevermore. You got to go more than one lexicon, but it's there.
Yes.
And then you know,
be careful, too. You know, if you don't go to more than one lexicon, if you don't take the time to genuinely devote the effort that's necessary to understand, it isn't going to happen for you. You know, and that's by design. We've talked about before on this program, why didn't God make it easy? He could have laid it all out. And he says, okay, here's the 5 conditions of the covenant. Here are the 5 benefits of the covenant. The benefits are fulfilled through the first 4 of my Moed Mikre, which are invitations to be called out and meet. And this is the benefit of each of those 7 Mikre and what they specifically represent. And I don't want you to look at this stuff as a law. I want you to look at this stuff as, this is instruction. This is guidance. And here it is all for you. This is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to do it for you. So this is all possible. Could he have done that? Yes. So you have to ask yourself, why didn't he do it? Why didn't he just lay it out and... We used to have a book called Cliff Notes. I don't even know if they still exist. Which takes complex books. Yeah.
I used to go to Wikipedia to get the same information.
Okay, so now it's Wikipedia, and they get you the synopsis. It's like so many times I'm asked, can you just dumb it down and shorten it up and simplify the whole thing? And I said,
well, that's
you
what
know,
you've done. That's what yada yada is. You've dumbed down the Torah for people.
I think we have.
Sure.
Yeah.
The 1 million words.
So I dumbed it down to the point that I could understand it. There you go. I have made it easy. At least vastly easier. Okay, so it's 8,000 pages of books that I've written on this. That is the short version. Really, trust me on this. I'm only presenting.
I'm sorry, but that's growing.
Yeah, it's growing. Yeah, that is the short version. Yeah, observations is 1,500 pages already.
But if you dumped it down anymore, you would be doing what we get accused of doing all the time, which is becoming a religion of our own. That's what religion does. They try and dumb it down to the point where they're just telling you what to do. It doesn't require you to think. You just do as you're told.
Let's be clear about this. God is really smart. He is much smarter than we are. Our collective intelligence combined with him is navel length. Okay? That's the difference. He is the ultimate communicator. He is the author of this plan for us to live forever in his family. If he didn't create a simplified version, how arrogant would it be for any one of us to try?
To think we can.
Or that we should. There's a reason he didn't. And we ought to ponder and celebrate the reason that he did not create a short and simple approach.
Goes back to our discussion today, too.
Yes.
If he lets anyone in on an easy ticket that hasn't really shown their desire, then you're going to really empower somebody that way?
Correct.
I mean, look what they did with the Masama. What would they do with the Torah with that kind of empowerment? If you turn someone into light and give them that
correct
power. That's scary.
Yeah, look how horrible religious and political and military men are today. Look at all of the horror that takes place on our planet. Look at it throughout human history on what people have done to one another. And imagine now empowering men with seven dimensions of power. I mean, essentially,
infinite more power.
This is greater than the law.
As this passage we just read says, limitless power. If you were to take most leaders today, military, political, religious, and give them that kind of power, just imagine how horrible they would be. And so there has to be a filter. There has to be a means for Yahweh to say, these people who have been thoughtful, whose attitude I enjoy, who made the effort to know me, who like who I am just as I am, who accepted my terms and conditions, these people I can trust. These people I want to empower. These people are my children, and I want to spend eternity with them. And we're going to have a grand time as this perfect family, exploring the new universe that I'm going to create for them. And I'm going to give them everything that is mine to give. I want to lift them up and help them grow. And I'm going to empower them and enrich them. I'm going to do everything that a loving father would do for their children. But all of these other people, if I let them in, they'll ruin it for all of us. Eternity is a very long time. They'd ruin it for all of us. He has to have a filter. He has to have a mechanism that keeps the undesirables out. And fortunately, God who created the universe isn't the religious God. The religious God says, you'll either accept what I'm offering, I'm going to burn your britches forever in hell. You either kowtow to me, bow down to me and worship me, or I'm going to see to it that you're tortured forever in hell. That's not a father. That's a sadist. That's an abuser. That person you wouldn't want to spend any time with. And so as you study his words, and I don't know why we were the first to figure this out in 2,500 years, but we were. When you study his words, what you find is that for the vast preponderance of people, there's no punishment. He's not sending them to hell. God says, if you were misled, I'm sorry, but I gave you life. I gave you the opportunity. if you chose to squander it, if you were so easily misled as Christians and Muslims and secular humanists are, then I'm sorry, but you don't have the right attitude to spend eternity with me in heaven. So I'm not letting you into heaven. I don't know you. You don't know me. You might not even like it here. But I'm not going to punish you either. I want to see to it that once your life is over, your soul will simply
evaporate.
It's just over. Pain, no punishment, no grief, nothing. There's a consequence of not taking the time to know who Yahweh is, to appreciate what he's offering, to accept this covenant offer, which is the most generous, beneficial ever offered humanity through its entire history. There's a consequence. Yeah, your soul will cease to exist. You'll still live on. You're in the memories of those who knew you and loved you, but your soul is gone.
You had however many years you had. You enjoyed it however you wanted to do, and when you died, you died.
And that's 99.9% of humanity.
That's correct. That many.
99.9% of humanity. But God would not be loving. It's impossible to be loving unless you hate those who deliberately seek to harm your children. If you do not hate them, if you do not hold them accountable, then you're not responsible or loving. And so for those who have purposefully misled his children, political leaders, religious leaders, military leaders, it's an express ticket to Sheol. God's not going to torture them there. God's not going to ever go there. Sheol is the place that's apart from God. There are no fires there.
You say that is the torture.
Yeah, it's simply an eternity with like-minded individuals. You know, the likes of Adolf Hitler and Hadrian, they're going to get to Caligula. They're going to get to spend an eternity together. Miserable people together for all time. That's the anguish. And, of course, to end up there, they will have been judged. The only people who are judged, 99.9% of people aren't judged. All of those who accept the covenant are not judged. All of those who simply didn't know, who didn't act on the terms and conditions of the covenant, who were misled, they're not judged. The only people who are judged end up in Sheol. And so as a result of them being judged, as you know, I want to be at Paul's trial, and I want to be at Muhammad's trial, and I want to be at Hadrian's trial. Those are the three trials that I most want to attend. And I have no right to ask, but I've certainly asked Yahweh for the opportunity to serve as a witness at those trials. They will know the Creator God of the universe, and then they will be separated from him for all eternity. And that's going to be anguishing. But it's mental anguish, not physical anguish. There's no bodies in Sheol. And so the actual Creator God created three destinations for human souls, not two. And so he's not a sadist. It's a loving father that says, you've chosen to be part of my family. Welcome. And to all of those who chose to lead his children astray, he says, there's got to be a consequence for that, and I'm going to hold you accountable. What is so incredibly sad, though, it plays into the question, Kirk, that you asked during the earlier show today, and that I rehearsed again for our listeners tonight, because I don't think there's anything more important that I can share. Why is it that so few people capitalize on Yahweh's covenant offer? And the thing that struck me was more painful to me than most anything I have read in the last decade is when Yashaya Isaiah, who is clearly the most prolific of all the prophets. And Yashaya, for the first time, you know, he's been reporting what Yahweh has told him, and he has issued some very profound thoughts. And, of course, most of what he says in the first 10 chapters are, God, I hate religion. Yahweh despises religion. He despises politics. Why did you choose to trust political and religious man who is misleading you, who's taking advantage of you, instead of me? And that's really the essence of the first 15 chapters. And so in the midst of that, Yahweh invites Yashaya to heaven. And Yashaya, for the first moment, is brought right before Yahweh himself. And Yashaya breaks down almost in tears.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, he issued an invitation. Open the door. And no one was there. And, you know, Yashaya, his first reaction is, oh no, what have I done? I've been given this wonderful opportunity to share, and I must have failed because look how distraught is the God that I'm serving. You know, what have I done that's wrong? And you know, God immediately explains, but can you imagine making this offer to humanity, the five benefits of the covenant? I'm going to perfect you. I'm going to make you immortal. I'm going to adopt you into my family. I'm going to enrich you. I'm going to empower you. We're going to live forever together. I'm going to give you everything I have. You're going to inherit the universe and live all of your life with me. And we're going to walk together. We're going to talk together. We're going to explore together. We're going to have these great parties together. And you offer to pay the entire price through Pesach and Matzah yourself. You lay it out so clearly for humanity. And there's not one soul at the door. You know, for a better part of 25 years, there was no one.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
No one. So it just reemphasizes this point that it's all laid out. It's all clear. The offer is generous. It's never changing. You can trust the author. It happens to be God. And yet, almost no one wants to capitalize. So I'm speaking particularly to you, Israel, and Yehuda. Things are going to get really bad. Really bad for you. The whole world's going to turn against you. And when it does, don't turn to the Israeli Defense Forces. Don't turn to Netanyahu and your government. And for God's sake, don't turn to your rabbis. Don't rely on your wealth. Don't rely on the military. Don't rely on politics. Don't rely on religion. Turn to and get to know Yahweh. And while you can do that on your own, the fact is you're not going to have enough time. That's, you know, we began to analyze what the neck, this sign that Yahweh was going to lift up in the for all the world to see in the last days. And when we came to the conclusion, it has to be this collection of books, particularly, observation for our time. Because there isn't enough time to do what we've done. No one else is doing it now, and there isn't enough time left to complete this task. And so as we reach these days in 2030, 2031, 2032, and approaching 2033, there won't be enough time, even for those fluent in Hebrew, those who can devote their entire time to it, which I think will be impossible because there'll be too many distractions. There isn't enough time to replicate what's here. But it doesn't need to be replicated. It's already here. Capitalize on it.
There'll be time to verify it.
Yes,
you
there will be.
Then verify it for yourself.
Yes.
Well, when did Hezekiah take about 2 weeks? Because he had the source.
Yeah, it took about 2 weeks. Yeah, you know what's interesting about the Hezekiah story? You know, the Hezekiah story, for those that don't know, and I think most everybody knows it, is that Hezekiah is a real bright spot in the history of horrible Jewish kings. You know, there was one great, great, great Jewish king that Yahweh adored, to David. You know, David is Yahweh's most beloved son. David is really mankind's greatest gift through the Proverbs and the song. David is my soulmate. He is my great love. And I understand that a lot of people might think that I'm making too big a deal about David, but Yahweh makes a big deal about David, and you can never be wrong if your perspective on something is the same as his. So, you know,
one and I wish Yahweh shirt.
Yeah, that's
I like it. I'll take one.
Yeah, that is the reality of the whole thing. And you know, as you have the opportunity to read and consider what he had to say about his analysis of the Torah, not the piece of garbage that religious men have handed down as their oral law that's recorded in their Talmud, not that piece of trash, the real Torah, the one that's found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, the one that was written by Moshe, dictated by Yahweh 3,450 years ago. It's available. Read that one. And if you don't have the time to read that one, open up An Introduction to God. Learn the language. Learn the alphabet. Learn the stems. Learn the conjugations. Explore why Hebrew is such a marvelous language, unlike any other language ever conceived. The only language where there is no past, present, or future tense. Everything simply is, just like it is in a photon of light. A language where the moods all convey volition. First, second, or third person. It's all about choice. It's all about free will. Every word of this is offered such that we are given the opportunity to choose. In that statement we just read, two verbs back to back, kum, stand up, halak, walk, they were both written in the imperative, which in Hebrew conveys second person volition. He's talking to Abraham. It's your choice. This is what I'm offering. But if you choose, then I want you to stand up, take a stand, and walk. Now, what other language has moods like that? And then it has these stems, which every verb is assigned a stem, and each stem conveys the relationship between the speaker and those being spoken to or about, establishing a relationship with them. And the Hittite stem, for example, was the stem that explained walk in that statement that I read just a moment ago. And what the Hittite stem says, and you know, some people might say, oh, you're being way too pedantic, and I don't want to know about the grammar, just make this simple for me. Well, if you don't love these things, you'll never really come to fully appreciate who Yahweh is and what he's offering. The Hit-Patel stem, assigned to halak, the Hebrew word for walk, means that when you take this walk, do it independently. You know, the path that I've provided is single file. The path that I've provided is not supported, in fact, it's condemned by every human institution, religious, political, military. And so the Hittite stem says that when you're doing this, you're doing it not only of your own initiative, you're not being influenced by any other source. That also includes Yahweh. Yahweh says, I'm not going to compel you. I'm not going to order you. I'm not going to force you. If you choose to take this walk with me, you're doing it at your own initiative, independently. I'll greet you once you've begun, but you've got to do it independently. I'm not going to force you. I mean, God could force anything he wanted. He didn't.
Yeah.
Total freedom.
Yeah, going back to what you were talking about, people, you know, saying you're pedantic about the grammar. But the problem is, if you ignore the grammar, you know, there's a huge difference between I want you to want to do this, and you will do this.
Correct.
And that's where you only get that from the grammar. You don't get that if you don't pay attention to the grammar. Both
yes,
would be equally valid without the grammar.
The cohortative, for example, is first-person volition. If Yahweh is speaking in first person, which he does throughout the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and the cohortative mood is used, excuse me, I'm getting into grammar, some people may not like that, but if he uses the cohortative mood, he's saying, this is what I want. This is what I want. This is my will. This is what I choose. This is what I desire of you. And then if he uses the imperative mood, he's saying, this is up to you. It's your choice. I'll tell you what I want. I'll tell you what I think is in your best interest. I'll tell you what I'm offering. But it's your choice. Do you want to have, and you know, the one thing he is insisted on is monogamy. Do you want to have a monogamous relationship with me? I'm not going to accept you if you're going to drag in a religious God. I'm not going to accept you if you want to still be political. I'm not going to accept you if you're going to rely on the family of man. If you want to be part of my family and trust and rely on me and spend eternity with me, then it's going to be exclusive. It's you and me. Now, it isn't exclusive once you're there. You come to him exclusive. Once you're there, there's a whole family. There may not be a lot of us, but there's enough of us. Thousands of us. Maybe not thousands today, but over time there's been thousands. There'll be many thousands more when Yehudim, Yisrael, and Yehuda, Jews, take this seriously. But you're going to walk to him independently. And that's scary for a lot of people because it's against the flow. You've got to be willing to go against the crowd. The crowd is all moving in one direction, and you've got to say, no, that's the wrong way. I'm going the other way. They're not going to like that. You'll be ostracized. But would you rather be embraced by people who can be mean, cruel, and abusive, who are lost? Or would you rather be embraced by the Creator God of the universe, who genuinely cares about you, who you can trust, who will never let you down? Is it the one who is trustworthy or the many who are not? That's the choice you get to make.
Would you rather follow the crowd and walk off the cliff or be the one guy that goes, hey, that's the wrong way, man. I'm going this way.
Yeah. And you're one in a million.
Going along with the crowd gets you. It gets you right off the cliff.
If you go with the crowd, you're going to die. If you're leading the crowd, you're going to spend eternity in Sheol. And it's only the few who are willing to take the risk and walk the other way that actually come to know who Yahweh, the Creator God of the universe, our Heavenly Father, actually is and take advantage of what He's offering.
Let me share one thing on verbs.
Sure.
This was funny. I'm sitting downstairs. Terry's watching a dog show. And I'm playing with the computer, looking up some things for tonight. And there's a gal now.
Oh, my. You've gone digital? The world is going to stop. The world is going to stop spinning. My analog artistic friend,
and I press the button.
Her, he has gone digital, and he is now using his computer?
Yeah, I can do it. A little bit.
Oh, what the world is coming to.
I know.
That's one of the reasons you're very caring. She's your computer expert.
Who knows where I could get to?
I still pass all my emails to you through Terry. Terry, for those who don't know, is Kirk's wife. He married way above his pay grade.
I remember above my pay grade. Yeah, she's the brains of it. But this was, we love dogs, and most of y'all love dogs.
Yeah.
So. But there's the strangest, and I've seen the guy before. He is a professor or a PhD or something, and he trains dogs, or he has a dog that he trained and did all these experiments with, and the dog is absolutely famous. He knows over 1,000 words, and I mean he knows 1,000 words. Average dog, the most brilliant dogs usually can only get up about 200 words, but he explains how he did it. And he said what he found was in teaching a dog how to react, he couldn't use a noun. He uses verbs because the action helped him to understand what the verb was. I look up every noun and go to the verb to figure out what the noun really is. And I thought that amazing. In the whole universe, that's what he figured out. He said, no, and that's why he could do 1,000 words. He understood it.
Wow. I understood. Hebrew is such a marvelous language that to really understand, ultimately you start to think in it. You're not going to start there. But here's this marvelous language with these stems that establish relationships between the speaker and those he is speaking to or those he's speaking about. You know, sometimes it's as simple as the call stem, which says, what I'm saying right now is just genuine, it's actual, it's literal. Don't try to interpret it and go crazy. I'm just laying it out here for you, straightforward fashion. And sometimes, like the Hippel stem, I was saying, I am conveying this to you in such a way that you're going to experience what I'm sharing as if you were me. I'm going to bring you into this reality so that we experience it the same way. And then we haven't even talked about conjugations. This perfect language to reveal God's nature. There's two conjugations, the perfect and the imperfect. They speak of things that are ongoing or things that have been completed either in the past, present, or future. And it's such a helpful tool because, for example, each of the 10 statements that Yahweh etched in stone, they were written in the imperfect. What a benefit for us.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't say, thou shalt not commit adultery. And, you know, if you do, you're going to hell. I'm going to burn your bridges for that.
Yeah.
It just says, don't make a practice of it. Don't make a habit of it. And even then, he's not talking about a relationship between a man and a woman.
Yeah.
He's talking about
He's
talking about a relationship with him.
That is exactly true. You know, statement, honor thy mother and father, it doesn't even say that. It says prioritize. View as enormously significant your relationship with your mother and father. It's the one, by the way, that's actually written in the volitional mood. It says choose to do this. And he's not speaking of your earthly mom and dad. Just the previous statement. He condemned fathers, two statements prior. He condemned fathers for misleading their children. He sure as heck isn't talking about human fathers. My human father.
Well, not just that, the following statement, even more so. Yeah, because it goes on to say, so that your days in the land will be prolonged. It was by listening to the teachings of their fathers that caused them to get kicked out of the land.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm.
And so what God is talking about is prioritize your relationship with your heavenly father and spiritual mother. And spiritual mother, of course, is the set-apart spirit, the Ruach Kodesh. Mm-hmm. She is the maternal aspect of Yahweh's nature. Prioritize that and value it. Choose to. But if, for example, you know, don't bear false witness or don't kill, don't covet, if those things were written in the perfect, then we'd really be in trouble. We're one and done. But they're written in the perfect. All it says
don't bear false witness. How many of us lied as a kid? I mean, just like
all of us.
Instinctively.
Well, I didn't do it.
How's that work? I don't know.
You know, I was a Christian.
Every person on this planet
was I was an ordained elder. Everything I said, every sermon I gave, every Bible study I led, every time I taught people evangelism, I was bearing false witness. I was wrong. And if that don't bear false witness is written in the perfect, I'd be screwed, blued, and tattooed. Well, yeah, we have a plan for all of our faults anyway, so that's really not true. But I would still be guilty of having done those things. But the fact that it was written in the imperfect, which is this, don't, on an ongoing basis, make a habit of doing this. The moment I stopped promoting Christian evangelism or leading Christian Bible studies, then I was no longer guilty of that instruction. Absolutely. The moment you stop, it's over. Don't worry about it anymore. Good enough. Let's go on. Next, it gives us the opportunity to have a painful past. The fact that every instruction he writes to us is written in the imperfect means that it does not matter what we have done in the past. It is totally irrelevant. As soon as we change our approach and our attitude such that it reflects what he is offering, then we're good to go. And even then, he's not asking much of us. You know, once again, who is the one person Yahweh calls out and said, he is my son, I am his father. He calls him my beloved, and he says, this man, my son, he's right. He's vindicated. From my perspective, he's perfect. Who is that?
Dode.
David. So was David a bad boy?
Oh, yeah, he had his moments. But not in God's house.
Did he ever? I mean, oh, goodness. You don't want to follow his example, right?
No.
He even admitted, I got more flaws than I got hairs in my head. But if the person that Yahweh says is perfect in his eyes, his beloved son, had a past that's that checkered, doesn't that tell you something? That it isn't about being good, it's about being right? It's not about what you've done, but what you know and how you've responded to it. That's what matters. It's all laid out there so beautifully for us. And that the single most prolific and articulate person in human history, Dodd, David, sex in a relationship, Dodd's behavior was tragically flawed. God didn't care. All he cared was Dodd prioritized Yahweh's testimony. His relationship with him was open to his inspiration and took the time to share what he learned with all of us so we could capitalize upon it.
He was the best shepherd, best teacher.
He was the best shepherd.
And next to Yahweh. I mean, he was
right.
Remarkable.
No, it did. If you were to ask Yahweh who's the best shepherd, he wouldn't say himself. He'd say Dodd, his beloved son. He is the example from what's important. What's important to value your relationship with your Heavenly Father, to listen to what he has to say, to understand it, to accept it, to act upon it, and then once you grow and learn in that relationship, to take the time to share it with others. And when he did that, he generated infinitely more enemies than friends. Permeates his work. He never loved his enemies. He hated them, as he should. They were also enemies of Yahweh. But he became the most articulate guide we have ever had. The smartest person who ever lived, laid it all out for us so that we could understand who Yahweh is and what he offered. And he turns out to be the only eyewitness to what would happen 1,000 years later. With Yosha's fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim, and then Shavuah by the set-apart spirit, he is the only eyewitness to those events, and he was an eyewitness 1,000 years before they happened.
That's still amazing.
His 22nd and 88th Psalm provide the single best view of what happened on those days. The only thing remotely close to it is what Yeshayahu would write in the latter part of Isaiah. So, Hebrew is a marvelous language. It's the language that Yahweh inspired. And so we have to turn to it if we want to understand who he is and what he's offered and offering and capitalize upon it. And it's not difficult. As we go through his meetings with Abraham, we're going to find out that there are only 5 conditions that Abraham had to meet. And now, don't minimize that, because God's going to test us on them. And he's serious about these 5 conditions. There's 5 things you have to do if you want to be part of his family. And if you don't do them, you're just not welcome. You know, as we have learned over and over again, you don't get to negotiate with God on these things. He is negotiable on a lot of things, but these things aren't among them. You know, the first thing you have to do, the first thing he asked of Abraham, you have to walk away from your country. You have to walk away from religion and politics. You have to walk away from militarism. You have to walk away from the family of man and disassociate yourself from societal customs. That's a prerequisite. Now, that is not speaking of geography. You don't need to... You know, if you're in Florida, you don't have to take a boat off to the Bahamas. Then you'd be in a different government. It has nothing to do with geography here. It's not about location. It's about attitude. You know, are you one of those people that places your hand over your heart and sings the national anthem and pledge of allegiance, who is actively political? If you are, then you're in total violation of this requirement, this first requirement to be part of the covenant. If you're going to church on Sundays, you're not welcome in the family of God. You have to disassociate yourself from those things. And why? Because they're not trustworthy. And God says, if you're going to trust them, then you can't trust me. Because we're pulling in opposite directions. So that's the first requirement.
Mm-hmm.
The second is, walk to me and become perfect. Well, think about it. Where does Yahweh present a path that we can walk? There's only one of them, isn't there?
Moed Mikra.
So it's the Moed Mikra, the invitations to meet with God. Seven of them. The doorway is Pesach. That's the doorway to life. The second step along the way is matzah, unleavened bread, where he perfects us, removes all impurities from us. So what? On the third day, we can be bechutim. Yeah, be firstborn children, be adopted into his family. And that seven sevens later, on Shavuot, we're enriched and empowered. Every aspect of our lives is filled with enlightenment and enrichment and empowerment. That's the path to Yahweh. Ultimately, it ends in the seventh celebration each year of Sukkah, which means to camp out with God. And so, that's the path. Walk to me and become perfect. Since he's offered these invitations, that's what Mikra means, it's an invitation. He's offered these invitations, accept them. Not much is required of us on these invitations. Just accept them. So that's the second statement. The third is trust and rely on Yahweh. So is it possible to trust and rely unless you know him?
Yeah.
Come on, he didn't say believe me.
You have to know who he is.
He didn't say put your faith in me. To trust and rely on me. You can't trust or rely on somebody unless you know them. You don't know who they are. You've got to know what they're offering. You've got to think about it and understand it before trust and reliance are viable concepts. And what Yahweh is saying here is rather than trust and rely on your government, rather than trust and rely on religion, rather than trust and rely on your military, all of which are going to let you down, all of actually are working against you. Trust and rely on me. I'm worthy of it. I won't let you down. You can rely on me. But I want you to do so. I am your ultimate father. I'll lift you up so that you never fall again. The fourth condition. And by the way, there's not a single one I've mentioned so far that costs us anything. With each of these conditions.
That is also a benefit.
Oh, a huge benefit. Once you come to understand Yahweh's position on government and religion, and you're freed from that muck, it's like this enormous weight has been pulled off of you. You're liberated. Your eyes are open. It's an enormous benefit. Trusting in Yahweh,
right,
so that you have total confidence in your life, there's no longer any risk or vulnerability that can ever hurt you again. It's an enormous benefit.
I used to be one of those guys I would listen to, conservative talk radio from the time I left my house to the time I got home. Yeah, I had my headphones on, listening to it at work. It was one of the, I was constantly getting upset and angry about both sides. Yeah, I would get tired of hearing, especially during like the Bush administration, hearing conservatives justify his action. And I was constantly angry. I was never happy with it. I learned to let that go. I've become a much happier person. And I look at some of the people I know that are still in that place and just how miserable they are. And it doesn't even matter whether their party's in power or not. They're just constantly upset because why wouldn't you be happy with this? The situation sucks.
I think you're aware that I spent a lot of time one-on-one with George W. Bush. Got to know him really well. And the first time I met him, I spent most of the day in what was his home at the time, the governor's mansion in Austin, Texas. And Karl Rove was there. By that time, he had really long, stringy hair. And it was the two of us, or three of us, because Karl Rove was there for most of it. But a lot of it was just George Bush and I. This was when he was running for president. He hadn't been elected yet for the first term. And you know how I am. I'm really pushy. I asked him. I must have asked him 100 questions. And when he gave an answer, I probed that answer and then pushed him again. I don't think he'd ever encountered anybody quite as blunt and bold or aggressive as I was. I was polite the whole time, but I was really pushing all of his buttons. And I asked him, why do you want to be president? And the answer he gave told me that he was going to engage in the Iraq War. I knew it. It's what his words said. And it caused me that and a combination of things. One is, he just wasn't very smart. It's amazing how people who don't think they're all that smart really are smart, and some people who pretend that they really are smart aren't smart at all. You know, my mind works pretty fast. I'm able to size up people. He was stupid. And this man was dumb as a stone, and you can't fix stupid. All right, a lot of things you can fix, you can't fix stupid. And I walked away from that meeting, and it was interesting. A week later, I was having dinner with Henry Kissinger. And I asked Henry, I said, Henry, I just spent the day with George Bush. You know, at the time, I was a billionaire. You know, I'm not anymore. I'm not even close, but I was at the time. And so, you know, I had access, and I was being coveted by political leaders to support them. So here I am. I'm having dinner with Henry Kissinger. It's a tiny little table at a restaurant, just the two of us. You know, some things you just don't know. How in the world did that happen? And I said, can you explain your position? I'm happy to share mine. But what do you think of him? He said, complete and utter lightweight. He says, I don't know if you know his history, but abused drugs when his father was in the White House. Failure in everything he's ever tried to do. The only thing that he's got going for him is people know his name because of his dad. And that's it. And then I shared my experience with him. And I said, you know, is there anyone that we can support this time through? Now, understand, all of this was before I started translating Hebrew and came to know Yahweh, because obviously now I would never meet
with him. You'd have nothing to do with him.
I'd have nothing in common. I'd have nothing to do with him. I wouldn't have dinner with Henry Kissinger. I'm glad I did, because I
would have considered donating a dime to any of them.
Right. And, you know, at the time that he recommended John McCain, and I got to know John McCain, I had him in my home. I've been to his home, and, you know, we spent a lot of time together. And the John McCain of the first election cycle was actually a pretty decent guy. He lost his way. He became a warmonger. I don't like John McCain as he is today, and he's not going to be alive very much longer. I'm only sharing this story. First, you brought it up in the George Bush thing, because what I was given, tremendous gift, firsthand, up close and personal. I know that every politician is an egomaniac scumbag. They're all in it from themselves. They're all abusive. They're all lightweights. They're all disgusting human beings. All of them. Doesn't matter the party. There isn't one of them that's worthy. And having been exposed to them, I know that. That's very empowering. And, you know, we have devoted an inordinate amount of time between the Shattering Myth shows and this program and the books, exposing and condemning the U.S. military, politicians on both sides of the aisle, and, of course, religion. Because it's essential to Yahweh that we take the time to understand these things so that we, too, can expose and condemn them, but most assuredly so that we can leave them and explain to people why Yahweh is asking us to leave them. Now, that leaves us with two conditions of the covenant. The fourth condition is to closely examine and carefully consider. The word in Hebrew is shamar. It means to observe. Closely examine and carefully consider mitzvah, the terms and conditions of my relationship agreement. The covenant is knowledge-based. It's not faith-based. Yahweh wants you to know these terms and conditions. Why? Because they're good for us. Why? Because they're well thought through. Why? Because they're the perfect screening mechanism for eternity.
In fact, it's the most beautiful plan ever written in history.
Right. I mean, the reason like the last chapter of Observations so much, and this chapter is your favorite of Observations, and I happen to also like the next chapter that presents Yahweh's evaluation of these things, is there's a reason for that. This is the most joyous, wonderful, empowering, uplifting, supportive offer ever made. So no matter how trustworthy and reliable and loving and supportive and caring we try to be, we're nothing compared to Yahweh. And this is the gift he's offering. He wants us to take it seriously.
And he's open to
closely examining, carefully considering. You know, if you like it, great. If you read it and you like me, great. If you choose to trust and rely on me, wonderful. It's your choice. But I'm going to do exactly as I promised. So come to understand these terms and conditions and understand the benefits. You know, not everybody wants these benefits. I do, but other people may not. You know, heaven's not going to be this sit around and praise session. God despises being praised. He despises being worshipped.
It's not going to be the physical idea of heaven people have of, you know, sitting in the clouds. Everyone's got a mansion with a milkshake and water fountain.
No.
And all we're not going to have materialistic ideals that people have.
Yeah,
that's not what heaven
is. Right. And if you like religion, well, you're going to be lost because there won't be a single religious person there. If you like politics, you're going to be lost because
Christmas tree.
Well, there won't be any political people there. If you love your military, I'm sorry, won't be any military leaders there. That's just the way it is. So that's the fourth condition, is five. The second, he asks us as parents to circumcise our children on the eighth, our sons on the eighth day. What that is saying is, I want you to raise your children so that they choose to be my children. I want this to be a tangible sign such that you remember me in raising them. I understand, you know, God's saying, I understand you want to nurture them. I understand you want to support your children. I understand you want to teach your children. I understand that you want your children to grow and be all they can be. Well, I want the same thing, too. And while you can do marvelous things for their mortal life, I can do all of these things and more forever. Raise them such that they are prepared to be my child. And the circumcision is simply separating them from the world of man unto God. And you're committing as parents to do that on behalf of your children. And that's both the husband and wife making that decision on behalf of their children. Now, if you didn't make it because you didn't know Yahweh at the time, God's not going to hold that against you. But if you know him, do that. And if you're a man, if you're male, and your parents didn't have you circumcised at on the eighth day after birth or any time after birth, I'm here to tell you, you better get it done. Yeah, it was really clear. There are no uncircumcised men in heaven. Not one.
Mm-hmm.
Not one. You cannot take advantage and participate in Passover as an uncircumcised male.
No, it's a prerequisite.
Prerequisite. You know, it's Yahweh's sacrifice, Yahweh's gift, Yahweh's house, his rules. The rules of his house are there for a reason. This is one of the rules. So as a woman, other than having this responsibility, should you know Yahweh and listen to him at the time your children are born, then this is what he wants you to do. If you haven't done that, then at the very least, once you come to know him, provide this instruction to your sons, even as they are adults. Let them know what you've come to know. But that's it. Those are the five terms and conditions. There are no more. Fun. That's it. That's all you got to do. Every single one of them is an advantage. And then the five benefits, they begin with Pesach, immortality. No end of life. That's why that statement said, prepares for life without end. The second is matzah, the removing of the fungus of yeast from our soul so we appear perfect in Yahweh's eyes. Does it make it perfect on earth? Look, Dod was his favorite. Yahweh says, Dod is perfect. And yet he, you know, was mischievous. He was Yahweh's favorite. Yahweh loves passionate rascals. And if you want to work with Yahweh, one of the qualifications is you got to be a passionate rascal. That's just the... That's what he enjoys. I happen to like that, too. I like strong personalities. I like people who are real. I like people that have passion. So, Yahweh's favorite are passionate rascals. And so, what matzah does, and the reason it's connected with Pesach, because Pesach without matzah is counterproductive. Then you're going to be immortal, but imperfect, and therefore separate
from
God.
No word of God.
Right. Yeah. Pesach and matzah, Passover and unleavened bread together, unyeasted bread together, it means that you are immortal and perfect. Direct ticket to enter Yahweh's home.
Wow.
And so what he does is isn't just say, well, you're welcome to my home. You're now perfected. You're immortal. That's not enough. He says, I'm adopting you. You are now my son or daughter. You're my child.
What's mine is yours.
What's mine is yours. And he has a lot. He really he has a lot to offer. What's mine is yours. I'm going to help you stand up. I'm going to get down on my knees to lift you up. I'm going to nurture you. I'm going to teach you. I'm going to do everything I possibly can to make your eternity wonderful. We're going to be father and son, father and daughter for all time. That's booklet on firstborn children. That's the third benefit of the covenant, to be adopted into Yahweh's family. The fourth and the fifth are both fulfilled on Shavuah, the promise of seven. Seven sevens from Bukhuram. And on that day, Yahweh says, I'm going to fulfill the rest of my parental duties. I'm going to empower you, and I'm going to enrich you. And the empowerment and enrichment are beyond our imagination. You know, we are three-dimensional constructs stuck in the fourth dimension of time. We're going to be seven-dimensional. We're going to be liberated of our physical bodies, become akin to light. We're going to be able to explore the entire universe. All, you know, probably in the range of 30 billion light years across. Right. Oh, to go to every galaxy and every planet and explore them and experiment and have great fun and then come back together as a family and report what you had seen and witnessed and participated in. And you're not only going to be able to travel in zero time to anywhere you want to go as light. It takes no time to get to wherever you want to go. And have all the benefits of immortality where you're like light, where time simply exists. We will at any time be able to transition back into matter when we just want the moment to stop. That there's a We go to a planet and there's a beautiful waterfall or a marvelous rainbow or this stunning sunset, a stream that we want to walk in barefoot, something we want to just enjoy and have time seem to stop, take on physical dimension. That's why E equals MC2. We can transition from energy to matter and then back to energy. And enter back into the seventh dimension and share and relate and enjoy, celebrate all that we've seen as a family. That's what he's offering.
I'm sitting here with my jaw dropped to listen to this, and I've read all this. I know this is true. I've confirmed it everywhere, but I'm just sitting going, oh, and once again, my original question was, why don't more people want this?
Yeah.
and that's why I repeated the answer. They don't know it even exists. To know this exists and to turn it down, you have to be a complete nincompoop. You do.
Yeah.
And most people just don't know it exists.
Well, that's the one I really don't understand. I get ignorance. I'm ignorant of a lot of things. And sometimes I get, you ain't got time. But I don't get it. The religious leaders who dedicate their lives to the lie, they know this. They have to know this is there. There's no way they could spend as much time as they do and not know this is there and choose to reject it. That's the part
I am convinced that every religious leader knows that what they're saying is a lie. I've shared before that I spent an inordinate amount of time. You know, it could be upwards of 10,000 hours with the most famous religious leader in America. He's passed away now. His name is Jerry Falwell. He was the author, the founder of the Moral Majority. I was the first television evangelist with the old-time gospel hour, pastor of a megachurch before megachurches existed, the founder of Liberty University. Easily, in fact, I think one year he was, when Time Magazine did their survey of Americans, he was the most respected American. Jerry Falwell. We were close. I mean, we spent enormous amounts of time together back before I knew the truth. And 9/11 happened. It happened the morning that I was actually flying Jerry back from a speaking engagement in my plane. I saw those planes fly into our buildings, and honestly, I knew the world would never be the same. And I had met George Bush. He was now president. And I knew he would bungle this, and that the consequence of his bungling it was going to cost thousands upon thousands of lives. As it turned out, it's cost hundreds of thousands of lives. And it would bankrupt the country, and it has done those things. I didn't know enough about Islam at the time to fill a thimble. But I knew him, and I knew that he was going to do the wrong thing. And you know, I recall trying to stop him, and because I had access to him at the time, I tried to stop him, and I failed. And then when I was writing the first book on Islam, as I met Al-Qaeda for the first time in Tea with Terrorists, one of the chapters in Tea with Terrorists caused me to have to put together some of the prophecies in the what I thought at the time was the Old Testament. I remember coming up with one that made no sense. It says, when he sins, I will not spare the rod. And it was a prophecy of him being a descendant of David, and that Yosha would sin, and therefore he would be held accountable for his sins. And I said, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. If he sins, then he's being held accountable for
his own sins.
What he's done, and not for me. And so this whole thing is a serious problem. And then I picked out like 15 translations, and they all said the same thing. And that's when I started to learn Hebrew and found out that's not what it actually says in Hebrew. It says when sin is associated with him. And to show the way to the benefits of the relationship when sin is associated with him, the key word, associated word, was Asher. And, of course, that led to 100 other discoveries all in the first few months. And I went to Jerry with a 15-page paper. I was just at the infancy of all of this. And a 15-page paper that said Christmas and Easter and Sunday and the Trinity and Jesus and Lord and all of these things. I just had 15 pages of them, all wrong. And so I asked Jerry if I could spend 4 hours with him. I said, I think it's going to take 4 hours to go through these 15 pages. And I'd like you to bring somebody with you that is your foremost expert in Hebrew. Because I want them to challenge everything that I say. And so we had the head of his university. And Jerry and I, the three of us, spent 4 hours over a prolonged lunch. And I laid out to him, I said, listen, Jerry, I hate to tell you this, but everything you're saying is untrue. Every word of it. Everything. You're a nice man, but everything you're telling everybody who listens to you is wrong. At the end of the 4 hours, he turned to me, put his hand on top of mine, and said, everything you've told me today is true. I know it. But if I were to say these things, there would no longer be anyone sitting in the pews of my church. The envelopes that I need to support this university would no longer arrive in the mail. And they would label me a kook. They will label you a kook if you tell anyone what you just told me. He knew it.
So what did he think he was doing?
I never met with him again.
He didn't justify the means. He thinks he can do more good by teaching the lie than he could by exposing the truth.
I don't know. I made no attempt. I made no attempt to understand the mindset.
Yeah.
What I was able to do through that conversation was affirm what you said. You said that all of these religious leaders know.
Yeah, they know.
That
and
they're lying.
That's what I can't understand, is to know the truth and choose to reject it. I get ignorant.
Yeah. Paul
a lot of people are just lazy.
That he was a demon-possessed liar. He knew it.
said so.
He admitted it.
Yeah, he admitted it.
Huh?
Chose to do it anyway.
That's the mindset.
Well, gentlemen, we have come past the time that we are broadcasting. We are simply recording for the archives, and it's true that 95% of the people who listen to these programs listen to the archives rather than to the live broadcast. This is a wonderful place for us to stop, and we'll resume tomorrow. I don't think, Kirk, we even made it into a second.
No, we're back. We're still on the page.
Yes.
Seven. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, we've discussed this many times. I would rather us have a deep and complete, accurate understanding of a single important statement than a superficial review of 1,000.
Hasn't done anything. It's quality over quantity.
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely.
We can cover 10 verses, or we can spend on an hour and a half on one. Which one's going to give us a better understanding?
And typically, the hour and a half on one. And what this really, I don't want to leave just with one thought. I don't know who it was that said it, and they may not even have known Yahweh, but they say, you know, you want to show the difference between the things of God and the things of man. Look at them closely. An example, of course, this person used, this is the famous example. Look at the lily, and no matter how close you look at it, the closer you examine it, the more beautiful it is. And then look at a man-made object like a pen under a microscope, and what you reveal is its flaws. So by closely examining and carefully considering every word that Yahweh preserved for us to study, to examine, to consider, we see how magnificent they are when amplified in this way versus how ridiculous and flawed the words of man are. So this is what he encouraged us to do for the reasons he asked us to do it. Well, gentlemen, thank you. I've had marvelous fun today.
Great time as always.
Yes, this was as enjoyable as the one we had earlier today. Yes, shalom. Good night, gentlemen.
Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.